This is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at go.wvu.edu/forward.
Welcome to the legislature today. I'm Curtis Tate. This is the last week of the 60-day legislative session. Everything wraps up Saturday at midnight, and we'll be there with you until the end. In the House of Delegates' morning session, bills that were delayed, tabled, or buried stood out more than what the chamber passed. The underlying concern was passing a budget with a possible $465 million deficit looking over the legislature's shoulder. Randy Yowie reports.
With lawmakers understanding that the executive branch is working to show the federal government that they are funding education, bills like Senate Bill 701, Appropriations for School Construction Funds, Senate Bill 650, Appropriations for Fairmont State University, and House Bill 5455, Appropriations to the School Building Authority, all had action postponed for one day. Both on second reading, the Senate Budget Bill, SB 200, and the House Budget Bill, HB 4025, were advanced to third reading with the right to amend. The House Finance Committee Chair, Delegate Vernon Criss, a Republican from Wood County, told me he still thought a waiver agreement would be reached and a not necessarily skinny budget would be passed by the end of the session at midnight on Saturday. But Criss did still say, stay tuned. The House Finance Committee Minority Chair, Delegate Larry Rowe, a Democrat from Kanawha County, said the federal payback and state budget are not necessarily intertwined.
Now, whether we get a determination from the federal government about any kind of clawback or payback that's required, we probably won't have that by Saturday night, but I think we certainly will have a budget. And I think the way that leadership is approaching this is to have sufficient funds put in education that would satisfy any federal requirement for the payback.
Yeah, everything we heard today about funding in education was postponed one day, so it looks like the wheels are turning.
Yes. For example, School Building Authority, we get $150 million. There's the one to the third grade new aides. That's, I think over $100 million. Those kinds of appropriations are extras to our education spending, and that's what apparently the feds have been concerned about.
A bill that moved from the active to the inactive calendar was Senate Bill 152 to display the official U.S. motto, In God We Trust, in public schools. For the legislature today, I'm Randy Yowie.
House Democrats held a press conference before the floor session this morning. Their single topic was the budget, now under debate. They focused on the disputed $465 million and allegations of executive branch mismanagement.
House Democrats talked of a lack of transparency and trust from the governor regarding this last-minute federal government demand to reconcile nearly $500 million in CARES funding to state education programs. They blamed the consistent underfunding of public education. Delegate Mike Pushkin from Kanawha County and the state Democratic Party chair said there was nothing last-minute about it.
He came out and made some promises during the State of the State, whether it was funding child care. He even talked about funding these crisis pregnancy centers. He talked about $50 million to state for the agriculture facility. Yet he knew that this was coming because somebody at his office was very bad at math and didn't keep up that percentage for funding for public education. And they obviously knew this was coming or they wouldn't apply for a waiver back in June of 22. So because of their failure to do math, they're failing the state of West Virginia, and now we're on the hook for almost $500 million.
Democrats asked why the state should pass a so-called skinny budget that ignores much of what the governor promised in his State of the State address. Delegate Kaylee Young from Kanawha County voiced concerns over initiatives not funded in one of the two budget bills, like no child care budgeted programs at all.
The rural hospital money for deferred maintenance that our hospitals so desperately need, it's not in this budget. There's no more funding for our foster care crisis or our CPS crisis. They're not even fully funding dual enrollment in the House version of the budget. There's no cost of living adjustment for retirees that our caucus has fought for years and years, and our retirees still aren't getting any more funding that they desperately need with inflation rising. There's no PEIA subsidy. There is a pay increase for our state workers, for all of our state workers, our troopers, our teachers, our non-correction employees, and just a general pay raise. But that pay raise isn't going to be offset by the PEIA reimbursement that's coming up when they're expected to spend 10% more this year, next year, and the year after.
Democrats do say they understand there are options to delay a federal waiver on the education funding clawback, even to 2026. For the legislature today, I'm Randy Yohe at the Capitol.
The Senate passed a number of House bills today. Some head to the governor's desk for his signature. Others head back to the House for consideration of any Senate changes. Brianna Heaney has more.
In West Virginia code, critical infrastructure is considered things like steel and chemical factories, power plants, airports, and healthcare facilities. House Bill 5091, or the West Virginia Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, increases penalties for trespassing or damaging those areas. There are some drastic increases in fines in the bill, like a jump from a maximum fine of $5,000 to a fine to $100,000. Opponents of the bill, like non-for-profit law firms that represent protesters, say laws like this are aimed at creating steep consequences for protesters of fossil fuel projects. The bill heads back to the House for consideration. Currently, there are no laws against driving slowly in the left lane. House Bill 5237 would change that. There are exceptions, like if there is construction or an emergency vehicle on the side of the road. The maximum fine is $25. The bill heads back to the House as well. Another bill would allow suspended school personnel to enter school functions open to the public. Supporters of the bill say the primary goal of House Bill 5650 is to allow parents or guardians who are suspended employees of the school to be able to pick up children or attend events. There are exceptions in the case of an employee who imposes a risk of danger or disruption to students, staff, or the learning environment. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
Advocates gathered under the Capitol Dome Monday to educate lawmakers about the prevention of addiction and mental health struggles. Emily Rice has this story.
Organizations from across the state spent Monday morning manning tables throughout the rotundas, educating the public and lawmakers about their prevention efforts against many issues, from gambling to tobacco use. Sheila Moran is the Director of Marketing and Communications for First Choice Services, which operates several programs and helplines to facilitate access to behavioral health and social services. Moran said while emergency services are vital, she wishes people would reach out before a crisis, so First Choice Services can offer them prevention tools.
There is a strong prevention component. You know, we really wish people would call us sometimes before things get to a crisis. You know, maybe a family member who's concerned about someone in their life who may be suicidal, they could call our 988 line and they could get a heads up. They could get some advice, some guidance to provide their loved one.
Moran said she was encouraged by the show of participation and support from youth attending the event.
I've been heartened to see how many of these young people have come up to our table. So I think it's a really different environment than it was many years ago. You know, so many of these kids are involved in clubs and organizations that are talking about some of the dangers.
One of those student participants was Colt Castle, a seventh grader from Washington Middle School who attended the event as part of the Pocahontas Youth Coalition.
We will throw parties every month to give people a sense of community to come to instead of going out committing crimes and doing drugs.
Castle said his involvement in the group came from a deep sense of community.
I wanted to help create a better sense of community so that people wouldn't go to jail for it and wouldn't die because of it.
Debbie Goff with Putnam Students Against Destructive Decisions, or SAD, said her student-led organization chooses which issues to address in their community.
We come into the community, we do a lot of educating students. It's student-led. So the students actually decide what issues they want to tackle the most. Right now it's mental health and vaping.
Goff said she hopes the education SAD provides its participants with will arm them in making decisions in the future.
I'm not naive enough to think I'm going to stop every kid from trying something. But what do they do? What, you know, how do they know? Give them the education to make that choice.
For the Legislature Today, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Euthanasia, or medically assisted suicide, is already illegal in the state. Now a legislative resolution aims to reaffirm that stance. Jack Walker reports on what lawmakers from both sides of the aisle think about the policy.
House Joint Resolution 28 was passed in the House of Delegates last month. With both chambers' support, the resolution would allow residents to vote to add protection from euthanasia to the state constitution during this fall's general election. Delegates in favor of the resolution are urging members of the Senate to secure its place on the ballot. But lawmakers held conflicting views on the measure at a Senate Judiciary Committee meeting Monday. Euthanasia is already illegal in West Virginia, and the resolution would not have a legal impact on medically assisted suicide in the state. But in a comment to the committee Monday, resolution sponsor Delegate Pat McGeehan, a Republican from Hancock County, said that reaffirming the state's stance on the practice is important.
There's this phenomenon of nihilism that's sort of spreading across the country, and I think it's an important issue we need to address. And to best of my knowledge, we'd be the first to place this and take a stand into the state constitution.
While euthanasia prevention received some bipartisan support, pushback on aspects of the bill fell along party lines. Republican lawmakers wanted to add language to the amendment so it could not affect capital punishment policies. But Democrat lawmakers like Senator Michael Wolfel of Cabell County said this contradicts the purported pro-life nature of the resolution.
Are you trying to suggest that, and maybe you're not, that the death penalty is, that's not a pro-life bill, is it? The death penalty?
Well, that's a complicated matter.
Yes.
I think you don't think
that's a yes or no?
Well, let's stick to
that's a very complicated issue. I can give you a long dissertation.
Let me jump in here for one second. Gentlemen.
Wolfel said he supported the resolution generally, but that protecting capital punishment gave him pause. Other lawmakers expressed concern over outright condemning euthanasia. Senator Mike Caputo, a Democrat from Marion County, said he became more sympathetic to legalizing euthanasia after watching his father-in-law suffer through hospice care at the end of his life.
We was praying for him to die. That's how much he was suffering. We was literally praying for him to die. And I know that if he could have made this decision, because he was one of the toughest people I ever met in my life,
sure.
If he could have made this decision to end it earlier, he would have done that.
Caputo also expressed concern that the resolution would hold legal implications for medical professionals. But McGeehan said the measure would educate the public on ethics in the state, not hold legal weight. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the resolution, and now it heads to the full Senate. As we enter the last week of the legislative session, we decided to check in with party leaders from both chambers to see how they feel about the session and whether or not they achieved their priorities. Randy Owey has today's interview.
This is day 55 of this 2024 regular legislative session. And I'm not usually a numbers guy, but my news director eked out these numbers this morning. As of today, there have been 2,600 bills introduced. 77 of the completed legislation, 27 have been signed by the governor. So that leaves quite a few bills that are either being looked at right now or pretty much are being tossed aside and won't be looked at all. So we wanted to talk to members of both on the House side, the Democratic and Republican Party, to see how they feel about some of these lightning rod issue bills. And with me right now is Delegate Mike Pushkin, a Democrat from Kanawha County, also the chair of the West Virginia Democratic Party. Thanks for being here. We hope to have Marty Gearhart with us, Delegate Marty Gearhart from Mercer County, who is the majority whip. He can't be here right now because he's in the middle of a committee talking heavily about the unemployment bill, which basically lowers the amount of unemployment safety net over time, and it has some clients do more searching for jobs. I think those are two of the highlights, Delegate. What are your thoughts on this unemployment bill?
I would much rather the majority whip, Delegate Gearhart, to be down here with us talking than up there working on what he's working on, because I don't think it's a good idea, and I think it's going to hurt a lot of West Virginians. At this time, it's not the right time to be talking about cutting unemployment benefits, and we're hearing about layoffs and job loss in the Northern Panhandle at Cleveland Cliffs at their facility, and also more recently at Allegheny Wood Products. You know, we're getting this really bad news about job layoffs and job loss, and the Republicans are adding insult to injury by up there working on cutting unemployment benefits, when we know that the fund right now is solvent. Unemployment's the fund's doing fine right now in West Virginia. There's no reason for this bill at this time. So I'd much rather Delegate Gearhart be down here with us than up there.
I guess I could be
a bad idea.
I could be a devil's advocate on one part of it, because I remember interviewing Scott Adkins, the director of Workforce West Virginia, talking about people that weren't really looking for unemployment the way they should. Not going out every 2 weeks for four or five interviews like they should to earn their unemployment, but sometimes just coming back with one or two. So they're asking them to do more. Does that sound fair?
Like right now across the country, unemployment's at an all-time low. It has been for quite some time. And there is work out there. I think that this is the wrong time for this particular bill. And he said that, you know, if we had this upcoming recession and there was more of a demand put on it, then there could be a problem. We haven't seen anything like that really in like 40 years. I don't think we're in danger of that. The fund is solvent, and it's the wrong time to be talking about kicking people off when we're getting all sorts of bad news about job loss in this state.
Well, I know that they've been up hashing this one out for quite a while, so there's some contention there. We'll see what happens. The bill about arming teachers, if you will, letting teachers be school protection officers. They can carry a concealed weapon, a stun gun, or a taser. There was an amendment to this bill, I thought, that twisted a little bit the initial reasoning for it when it came to counties being to opt in or opt out. Your thoughts?
First of all, West Virginia has a whole lot of pressing issues. We just talked about some of the job loss in the northern part of the state. We have a foster care crisis. We're in a child care desert. People can't get back to work because they're unable to find care for their children. We have not enough teachers in the classroom. We don't have enough correctional officers in our jails and prisons. Yet what the Republican supermajority wants to focus on are bills like arming teachers. And we're not hearing a huge public outcry from people who want to, calling for this bill. We definitely didn't hear from it from the teachers. I think it's a very misguided bill. The amendment, you're right, made it much worse. It says that a county board shall grant this to any teacher that goes through the minimal training that's required of this. So they don't get to, so a student could be, a teacher could be first day on the job and sign up for this training, and all of a sudden they're able to carry a gun into the classroom.
The original bill said that counties could opt in or opt out, school boards of education.
It allowed the teachers that option if they go through the training. This said the county board has no choice. If the teacher asks for it, they have, no matter how long they've been a teacher. And one part that's very troubling about it, the parents have absolutely no knowledge of which teachers are going to be carrying and which teachers are going to have guns around their children.
Yeah. That bill is still in committee. A lot of these bills, these hot button bills, are still in committee.
Out of the House, and it's over in a Senate committee.
Right.
Hopefully they have more sense than the House did. But I wouldn't bet on it.
Another one that's hotly contested are these school vaccine exemptions.
Yeah.
I mean, it started out where let's exempt some of the students there in virtual classes, which I think even a lot of people thought made some sense. There was some sense to that because those people weren't involved with other students. But then amendments added other schools, micro schools and all the other school choice schools. And then a third amendment added anybody that wanted a religious exemption.
Yeah.
And I know that the head of the Kanawha County Health Department said you're either anti-vaccine or pro-disease. I mean, that was a pretty strong statement.
Yeah. I'm glad that at least one public health official had the courage to speak out. I'm still waiting to hear from our state officials and from our universities to speak up, because I know how they feel about it, same way I feel about it. We're moving backwards here. One thing West Virginia has done right over the years is our rules and our laws regarding childhood vaccines. And that's why you haven't heard of measles outbreaks happening here in West Virginia. You hear about it in neighboring states. And that's why we've been able to eradicate so many diseases that just crippled our society for years. And this legislature is deciding to move back. They're moving us forward to the 1800s. That should be the motto of this legislature. You know, when we got here, I didn't realize that we were going to be declaring a war on Jonas Salk and Louis Pasteur. Didn't have that on my bingo card this year, but that's what we appear to be doing.
Seems like the majority talks about parental rights. I mean, it's parental right to do what you think is best for your child.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't work in regards to vaccines, because you have to achieve herd immunity in order to eradicate these diseases that have been a thing of our in our past, and they're trying to make these a thing of the future. They're trying to make measles great again, I guess. Well, one thing that West Virginia has done right has been our public health laws, and they want to eradicate that. And the amendment about an exemption over a deeply held belief or a religious exemption, anybody can get that. You or I could go get a letter from anybody, and then it says, once again, it doesn't say they may grant that exemption, it says they shall. So if you present this letter saying it's my deeply held belief that that we shouldn't be vaccinated, then you opt out. And when the less people that were getting vaccinated, the less likely we are to maintain that herd immunity, and you're going to see a return to measles and mumps and rubella and polio.
With this interview so far, I should wear a sign that says devil's advocate. Let me, because 45 states allow religious exemptions for vaccines. 45
states. And many states you're seeing these types of outbreaks, but you haven't seen it here. However, if this bill passes, you will see it here.
Talking about parental rights, one thing I'm trying to figure out is the Parents' Bill of Rights, because it empowers parents to direct the upbringing, education, health care, and mental health of their child. Parents can basically, if I understand this right, direct the school to adhere to their interests regarding their child. I can't figure out how that's going to go from theory to practice, because I know I've never heard of a school saying, I don't want parental involvement. All schools want as much parental involvement as they can. What degree to this might
we
this take it
want,
to?
We want everybody to be the best parent they can. We want parental involvement. Unfortunately, we don't have enough of it, but it's not something that you can legislate. I was told a long time ago you can't legislate morality, and you also can't legislate people into being better parents. I think what this bill does is creates an environment where you see a lot of lawsuits is what the bill actually does.
And it also says parents may bring suit against anyone for violation of this
article.
That's
the main active part of the bill, allowing cause of action so parents can bring lawsuits if they don't agree with every bit of the curriculum.
And it doesn't say to who. I mean, it doesn't delineate anybody at the school or within the school board or within the whole environment of, you know, could it be the assistant in a classroom? Could it be an aide? It doesn't really say who.
Unfortunately, there have been a lot of bills that are moving this year that would create an environment where the state might find itself in court. Maybe during the budget we should create a legal defense fund for the state, because that's what they're setting us up for.
Now, a bill that's in Senate Judiciary that hasn't even been taken up, had plenty of debate, was this obscenity charges in libraries. You know, the exemptions for libraries, school museums on displaying obscene material to minors. Heavy debate. We had a public hearing on it, and the Senate Judiciary hasn't even taken the bill up.
Well, I hope they don't take it up. It's a bill that it criminalizes librarians. It sets up once again an environment where we could be criminally charging librarians, museum curators, because they didn't go through every page of every book and make sure that everything was appropriate for everybody. Once again, it should be up to the parent on what their child reads. Hopefully the child's reading in the first place, but it should be up to the parent what the child reads and doesn't read. And you're putting this responsibility on librarians to somehow monitor every single book in the system. It's ridiculous. I don't see how it's going to work in actual practice.
The sponsor, Delegate Steele, came out and said, I mean, he had librarians from Raleigh County that were coming to him and telling him that these books were in these libraries and there wasn't anything they could do about it.
Well, I could find you 50 more librarians and more than that staunchly oppose that bill because it criminalizes their job.
Well, I'll be fair enough and say during Library Day here, I talked to two librarians that were from Wood County and I forget the other county, that said they didn't have any obscene material there, and it was local decision making that we would decide right beforehand. This is, in a general sense, when a lawmaker is elected, how do they reconcile voting to represent their constituency or their conscience?
I think you've got to bring up both. I mean, I don't want to do anything that's against my conscience, but there are many times that I would put my constituents before my own. Most of the time, you should put your constituents first. There have been a few times where I might not have felt as strongly about a bill, but I know that people in my district might be very much opposed to it or very for it. And first and foremost, we've got to represent our district. I think it's also important we represent the element of our district that can't afford high-priced lobbyists. They can't afford advocates up here. And that's who I'm always going to put first.
I'm sorry that Delegate Gearhart couldn't be here, because I've tried to engage as much as I could. I appreciate your opinions on all this. We've got a couple of seconds left. Is there any other bill that I didn't mention that's important?
I mean, the most important thing that the legislature does, the one thing we're constitutionally required to do, is pass a budget. And we're coming up on that. And right when we're getting ready to take up the budget, we get this bomb dropped on us that, well, we might be on the hook for $465 million, almost a half a billion dollars, because of a calculation error. Now, let's be clear about that. It's because of a calculation error on the part of the governor and the Republican supermajority for years. And there was a request put in. There was an application for a waiver almost a year and a half ago in June of 22. So they knew that there was a problem then.
And we heard about that earlier in the show.
And this problem was created by this illusion of flat budgets, and then you backload it, which throws off the percentage that you're spending on public education.
We're going to have to end it right there. I appreciate it. Thank you, Delegate Pushkin, and back to you.
Thank you for spending this time with us. Catch the legislature today, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. And remember, West Virginia Public Broadcasting covers the session daily in our radio news program, West Virginia Morning, and on our news site at wvpublic.org. We also broadcast the daily floor sessions of both the House and the Senate on the West Virginia Channel. I'm Curtis Tate. For everyone here at WVPB, thanks for joining us and have a great evening.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at go.wvu.edu/forward.